Today's episode is brought to you by the Vegas Beer Guys. The Everything Sequel podcast contains explicit language.
You have been forewarned.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Sequel podcast. This is the end of the 2009 single sequels edition. Today, we're pitching sequels, friends. Where, oh, where will we go? My name is Michael Shantz of the How Dare You Awards. Joining me, the man I'm really thrilled to see which movie he pitches to, Tom Stewart of Lonesome Whistle Productions. Say hi, Tom.
Tiger fucking Woods.
Well, that's not a hard one to guess.
No, he's back. Yeah, one last time. That's another reference that from Crank 2 High Voltage that hasn't dated well.
Right.
Not for political reasons, just because of a changed perception of Tiger Woods the man.
Yes, exactly.
And that was so 2009, that was still Tiger Woods was still in his perfect period, right? This was before we,
I think so, yeah,
before shock horror we learned that a wealthy and famous athlete,
right,
had a dubious moral character,
was just humping everything he could find.
I mean, a revelation that was barely newsworthy.
Yeah.
Well, no, this guy really
is that quotable? A sneak peek into what movie you've chosen?
Not necessarily.
All right,
but not necessarily not.
All right. Well, here we are, 2009. We got to pitch a sequel. I can't remember if on air or off air we also agreed to definitely come up with a pitch for Che Part 3.
It was off air, so I'm glad you're mentioning it, because I have one of those in my back pocket for sure.
Yeah, I've got a little
on the off chance that you remembered.
I've got a little sketched outline for something, yeah, really ridiculous.
Because I think we said in preparation for this episode when we were talking off mic, I believe one or both of us said, well, it's obviously not going to be Che Part 3,
yeah,
given what happens at the end of Che Part 2. And then I think it was you who sort of said, no, we should challenge ourselves to do a Che Part 3, which I think is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, you can really go a lot of different directions. I know.
You certainly can. Because you have no choice but to.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, while we're here, do you want to throw out your little outline?
Yeah.
Do with Che in Part 3? Do you even call it just Che Part 3?
Well, I am calling it Che Part 3.
Okay.
And the precedent that I'm using is a British, more specifically Scottish, TV drama series. It was a police procedural. It was on in the 80s and 90s on British television, called Taggart.
Sounds familiar.
He was the titular police detective that the series was about. The actor died after a few seasons, and it was such a cash cow that even though the show was named after the character who couldn't be in the show anymore, they continued to make the show, and it just became... It was still called Tagger, but it was still about his underlings.
Oh, I was going to ask if they were doing like a Doctor Who thing, like new actors would just come in and play Taggart. I realize why Taggart sounded familiar, because that's a character from Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, okay.
Which at some point we'll do, so...
The catchphrase of the show was, "There's been a murder..."
I'm sorry, you're going to have to say that again.
"There's been a murder." That's me doing my best Glaswegian.
That's awesome.
And then they just, so they went through the underlings and when they all went off to do other stuff. And this was just like, you know, on for like 10, 15 years, this show. So people, you know, even the surrogate Taggarts left eventually and they had to bring in more surrogate Taggarts. And so, you know, that was what I was thinking of when I was doing this, that there's, you know, if an idea is good,
right,
it can outlive its titular character. And then I did all that mental gymnastics, and then I realized probably a more relevant precedent would be Wakanda Forever. But I'd already gone through the kind of Taggart mill, so I can't bring that up anyway. But yeah, Wakanda Forever is I mean, obviously Benicio del Toro is not dead, but you can't have Che Guevara in it.
Oh, I disagree.
But I also if your pitch is a zombie film,
it's zombie adjacent.
I am both intrigued and appalled. The other thing that I wanted to do was do what we've talked about, where the third movie in a trilogy loops back to the original. Now I've actually seen Che Part One.
The next thing I was going to ask you, because I was
yeah. And what I found kind of curious about that is that it's set in two distinct time periods. So it's set, you know, in the lead up to the Cuban Revolution in the 1950s and in and it flashes forward and back between that and the United Nations conference in the mid-1960s or the early 1960s.
I'll have to take your word for it. I don't remember.
Well, that's what happens, and obviously, Che Part Two it just takes place in one very specific continuous time period. So, I'm gonna loop back to the original. So my Che Part Three is set in two distinct time periods, and the two distinct time periods, both of which are about the aftermath of Che Guevara's death. Because when faced with the challenge of doing a Che Part Three, I was like, I bet some shit went down after he died that is dramatically interesting. Mm-hmm. And boy, was I right.
Okay.
So the first part of it takes place directly after Che Part 2 ends. They put Che and his comrades' bodies, the special Bolivian special forces backed by the Americans. They fly it out by helicopter, as we saw at the end of that movie. They put it in an unmarked grave, which is what happened. They didn't want it to become a shrine for revolutionaries, so they put them all in unmarked graves. So that's the first thing that we see happen. And then basically the immediate aftermath of Che Guevara's death, all the focus was on the diary, because the diary was with him when he died. The Bolivian government had it. Cuba wanted it, as did the world's media. So basically, you know, who is going to get Che's diary? And this is where making a history film is great, because you don't have to do any dramatization at all.
Right.
Because the truth is always more interesting than anything you could come up with. And the truth is, the Bolivian government had it, and they were going to basically make a huge profit off selling the rights to it to the world's media. However, there was a Marxist spy within the Bolivian government who sneaked it back into Cuba.
That's fucking great.
So that's how Cuba ended up with it. And not only that, but in doing it, this Marxist spy, this Cuban sympathizer, in the act of returning it to Fidel Castro, was exposed. And so the Bolivian media found out that there was a Marxist within the Bolivian government, and this led to a period of riot within Bolivia, in the Bolivian capital.
Wow!
About the fact that there were Marxists hiding in the government, a public furore, I say red scare, but it wasn't a scare. There were reds in the government.
Yeah.
It's like what McCarthy thought was going on.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So that's the first timeline of the movie, is this business. And then the second timeline, so we're going to jump back and forth between that and the mid-90s, where a local guide who lives in that rural area of Bolivia where Shay was killed, you know, he's kind of made a business of taking people who want to know about Shay Guevara around this area, but of course he has to end his tour by saying, look, we don't know where his actual remains are because it was an unmarked grave. And then he reads a biography which speculates about where his grave might be, and then this local guide starts an exposition to find his remains, which eventually he does in the mid-90s.
Wow.
Thus building a kind of cottage industry, a kind of theme park in this area of Bolivia, which is dedicated to Shay, which is a huge part of the machine that keeps his image being regurgitated in pop culture.
Yeah, so right.
There's like, I think the statistics are there are like 10 hostels in this one town because they get so many visits from like left-leaning and leftist students and tourists who come and visit Che Guevara's grave as a shrine.
Hmm.
So we're gonna go between the two periods, but as I predicted, there's more than enough to fill a 2-hour movie with between these two stories of the aftermath of Che Guevara's death.
Well, you did way more work than I did.
Well, you say that, but I actually didn't do any work. I just sort of took history's lead. I came up with a structure which, by the way, I stole from the original Shay, which they stole from The Godfather Part 2.
So it's fine.
I really haven't done any original work here at all.
All I'm saying is, I mean, you've been talking for a good 10 minutes. I think I can cover the next 60 seconds or so. Because
let me guess, the corpse of Che Guevara gets struck by lightning and goes on a murderous rampage.
It wasn't that silly. I have to admit, at one point I was contemplating like a Che the Friendly Ghost type of scenario.
Why and, only contemplating? Yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, I kept the ghost
mashup of Casper and Che.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Every Hollywood studio will be running towards that property right now.
What I decided to do was take on a Frost Nixon,
mm-hmm.
you know, comparative. And so we have Che Castro. And it's so my idea was Castro in the remaining days of his life being confronted by Che and ask, you know, basically, it's him saying, what happened to you?
As a ghost.
As a ghost.
Yeah.
So it's so,
something you might want to start with that you're talking about.
Well, I said the last part of Castro's days. I mean, what else is he going to be other than
but
a
it
ghost?
Sounded, but that could have been the last few days of Shay's life. It could be that Castro can kind of project himself across time and space like Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, my idea was, you know, I think we talked about this either in the ranking episode or in the Che episode itself. But that idea of the oppressed that become the oppressor and
sure.
what happened in Cuba with Castro as its leader when they were there to throw off what they thought were the tyrannical people before them.
Mm-hmm.
And, so him questioning Castro as an old man and, you know, trying to come to a realization of who they thought they were, who they were when they were together and then who they ended up being. That was my idea.
So it's a Castro Carol.
That's the other thing I was going to say. It's a combination of Frost Nixon with the Christmas Carol.
I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could even expand it if you wanted to make it, if you wanted to add even more Christmas Carol to it. You could just have Shay as one of three ghosts visiting him.
Yeah. Don't think it didn't cross my mind. It could be
what?
Three versions of Che. You know, maybe as a young boy, and then when they were together, and then him sort of as an old man, even though he never got to become an old man.
But then he'd get to see his brother running Cuba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would be fantastic. And also, you could do a sort of a twist on Christmas Carol where he suddenly decides that he's going to change his ways and, you know, go back to return to democratic socialism.
Right.
And then he dies. He dies before he can tell anyone about it.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
There's a lot of potential there.
I'm genuinely interested in your movie, though. I'd like to see that movie.
Well, it sort of is. It's kind of a, I think of it, you know, like a smoke blew in the face situation where, you know, at the end, when they finish making the movie Smoke, they're like, we've got all these people here, let's just improv a movie. And I feel like, you know, right. It's the same where it's like, we've got all this historical research we can't use because Shay's dead, but so let's like fabricate it into another movie.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Well, while we're here, I'm going to officially change my ranking. Che stays at the top, but the next one will be Into the Blue 2 for me.
For a second there, I thought you were going to demote Che based on the quality of my pitch. Shay's part two wasn't as good as that.
I liked it, but with all due respect.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, you know, one of the things I realized, as I was watching Pink Panther 2, I remember just thinking, this had more laughs than I thought it would, and it has plenty of actors that I like that are doing good work.
Yeah.
I can't say that about, you know, other than Che, I can't say that about any of these other movies and to varying degrees.
Sure.
But after talking about Into the Blue 2, you know, the one thing I realized, I think I was giving Pink Panther 2 some credit as kind of a real movie.
Sure.
But when I think about the failures of that movie, say in its direction, we talked about, you know, you were talking about they're neither Cleese or Martin are at their best. And I had said something to the effect of, maybe that's because of directorial choices. We never get to see them in the same frame. We're always just kind of hopping from one to the other. And so I realized the one thing that Into the Blue 2 has that these other movies don't have is the director.
Yes.
And we talked at length about that. And so I realized just because something might include, say, bad acting or low budget aspects that are clear and evident, it didn't make it any less enjoyable a movie. And clearly that director, I can't remember his name now. Was that Herrick?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So clearly he had done something right with what he was given and gave me a movie that I cared enough about to write another sequel to.
Oh, okay.
So, cat out of the bag, I'm going with a sequel to the Into the Blue series.
Well, in the spirit of changing the ways, just like your Che Part 3 pitch,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to officially declare that I think on balance, the Pink Panther 2 is a better movie than Halloween 2.
All right.
I think, you know, in discussing it with you, the only kind of credit I was hanging on to with Halloween 2 was,
right,
it set out in a direction as a sequel that was, rather than sort of enduring the mistakes of previous and future Halloween 2s, it was actually setting out to do something about it. The idea that could all just be a an opening dream sequence, and the fact that the opening of the movie could have been a whole, could have been an entirely a dream sequence is
too much to bear.
Yeah, it's that I can't. The fact that I can't get on board with that part of the movie, pretty much, you know, it's like a house of cards. Pretty much after that, it all falls down.
All right.
So
we're both changing. That's never happened.
Yeah. No, not at the same time.
Yeah.
Have either of us ever changed our rankings?
Yeah, I think we've. I don't know. Wavered.
I don't know. Either.
I think it's possible.
You tell us.
Yeah.
You tell us, listeners. It's your, you're our archivists, okay? Because we don't have the time to go back into our own episodes.
Right.
So, yeah. No, I think so. You've got to change at the top. I've got to change at the bottom. So, this is what struck me coming out of these, of discussing these sequels now, is that it's perhaps the most eclectic set of movies we've ever covered.
Yeah, definitely. Right.
There's no point of comparison between them except these
white
weird
horses.
Kind of white horses and you know, bullshit prologues aside.
Yeah.
You know, it was the style, apart from, you know, things that were the style at the time, like, yes, wearing an onion on your belt. otherwise, that, you know, there's no commonality between any of these movies, so I'm not surprised that we've both changed our rankings, because it's really hard to pit these movies against each other, because there's no common framework of value that you're using.
Yeah.
So you have to think about, what do I value? And I think in both cases,
I think that was part of it. I think I was using the standard that I felt,
yeah,
critics at large should be using.
Exactly.
As,
yeah,
opposed,
yeah,
to what I actually, yeah, preferred.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, I thought, oh, well, in you know, if it's what I care about, clearly, Into the Blue 2 is you know, my favorite,
yeah,
movie here. Well, not my favorite, but you know, we always have Che as it's an outlier.
Yeah, sure,
you know?
Sure. Che's like, a given.
All right, fine, you're a good movie. You can be at the top, but let's talk about these other films.
Yeah, you don't have to play with the rest of them. It's,
yeah,
okay. You can go off into your own, yes, into your own corner and
do your math homework. We know that's where you,
yeah,
want to,
exactly,
be.
Exactly, yeah. While the other kids hit themselves with hammers and, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, so, but that's why a movie like Into the Blue 2 can do really well on a list like this, because as long as it justifies itself,
yeah,
it doesn't have to speak to any of the other movies in any way.
Exactly right. And it doesn't.
So, and it absolutely doesn't. And
no white horses. It's got the beginning, yeah, text bullshit, but
you know. And then Halloween 2 is more misguided than I originally gave it credit for. So,
yeah. All right.
So just one more piece of unfinished business while we're talking about Halloween 2.
Sure.
I want to read a listener's email on the topic of Halloween 2. It's from Kyriakos Vilches, who is one of our devoted listeners.
Yeah, always listening.
Gets in touch.
We thank
and,
you.
And, yeah, we thank you, and wanted to read out what he had said in an email entitled Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. Hey, Mike and Tom, just caught the new episode covering the bizarre mess that was Zombie's Halloween 2.
Yeah. Love that.
With you so far. I will admittedly say that even with all of its strange, strange choices, I'd still watch that one over Halloween Ends. I think we both agree
I think
with
we
that,
both
don't
said
we?
That, That's, yeah.
Yeah, both. Lol. Anyway, I just wanted to add to Octavia Spencer's long career of nurse bit roles and say that she also sort of played one in Big Mama's House when she helped Big Mama, parentheses Martin Lawrence, deliver that lady's baby at the house. So even in roles where she wasn't even a nurse character, she was still doing nursing.
She must do
poor
nurse
woman.
Stuff.
Can't get away from that profession. As always, keep up the good work.
Fantastic.
Thank you. And,
yeah.
Thank you for that observation. That's true. It's clearly casting directors have nursing in mind when they cast. A general nursing and home care in mind whenever they cast Octavia Spencer, which is full of terrible assumptions, especially given what she's capable of as an actor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So good. That's great.
Yeah, that is great, yes. So, nothing left to do but pitch.
All right, friend. Well, you want to tell us which movie you're pitching?
Well, I've gone first in our, you know, I've gone first for our shades.
You want to save it then till I'm done?
Yeah, and you've already let the cat out of the bag about which movie you're going to pitch for, so.
I have indeed.
So tell me about, yours will probably just be called Into the Blue 3 and nothing else.
Nope.
No? What? Whoa, okay.
You don't know me at all, I suppose.
Well, it's not less that I know you, that apparently you've lied about everything you believe in.
I have stated clearly how much I like a 2, 3, 4, 5. But if you can get a colon like this in its simplistic...
Isn't that a Whitney Houston song, a colon like...
Anyway. Yes, I believe so.
Why am I asking you?
But if you can't... Fair point. Fair point.
Even as a joke, I shouldn't be asking you.
But if you can get a colon with the... you know, the simplistic nonsense that I've developed here, then
okay,
I'd be more of a fan. I'm calling mine Into the Blue 3, Deep Revenge.
Ooh.
I love it because it doesn't make any sense.
It's as if deep revenge is some kind of a saying that exists.
It's not. That's what I like about.
It's so far from. You could only be talking about revenge that happens in the deep.
Yeah,
blue sea.
But I really did want to make a title that I think matches the level of the series where it currently is.
There's no reef in the reef, so you technically don't even need to have revenge in this movie if you don't want to have it.
Don't worry, sir. I've got that covered, because the first thing we're going to see is a news report, and it's going to have a banner headline on the top that says, "The Heroes of the Reef!" Exclamation point. And this is all over credits, so we're going to have... a news report / magazine cover / newspaper article catch-up impasse that we have for all sequels. Well, not all sequels, sure. But, you know.
Enough for it to be a habit.
Enough to be a habit. And so it'll turn out that they ended up helping the government get, you know, show them where the nuclear weapons were. And so they're the heroes.
The weirdest part of that is I just assumed that it was just because they found that that shipwreck.
The shipwreck? Well, on that count, they'll have their picture on Island Magazine. It's going to say the best
in the business.
They don't
even name the island in the magazine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, we want to keep this as generic as possible.
All that's by design.
In case we want to sell this to another local island.
Yeah, it's gonna say best in the business, so they're still doing their same business, but they're the best on the island now. Everybody loves them. We're gonna sort of cut back and forth between these news reports or magazines or newspapers with live action. We're gonna see Mace with a new girl. He's a happy guy.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
They looked happy as a threesome. I'm surprised you needed to add a surrogate Masiya Monroe in there.
You'll see why later.
Oh, okay.
They're going to be, glasses of wine.
She's actually a mermaid.
Giving each other a little cheers. we'll have a moment. I don't know if it'll be just Sebastian or all of them together saying their wine tastes like velvet, but it'll be in there. But we'll also see along the way here that all of the stuff we're seeing is research. There's something nefarious going on. Someone is watching them. Someone is following them. So right towards the end, we're going to see our heroes kind of talking with vaguely business-looking people. End credits. And in the post-credits, we'll see Mace walking with a lawyer. And the lawyer is going to say, you're never going to regret this. And then that lawyer walks past Azra and gives kind of a knowing tip of the hat. We'll cut to Sebastian and Danny. They're currently working with some government-funded scientists who are studying mollusks or some shit. Mostly because I like saying the word mollusks.
Yes. Is it? Are they hacking away at the mollusks?
Yeah, yeah. Mollusks with spatulas.
What's the plural?
Spatulas,
what's the plural
and
mollusks. Mollusks.
I just said mollusks. Yeah. Molluscas.
Yeah, Molokais.
Molokai. I like that. Yeah.
Molokai. I had to say it like Clint Eastwood in High Plains Drifter. Molokai.
They're on a boat. They're talking about setting up a grid, handshakes, great work. You're the best people we've ever worked with. We get back. It's sexy time for the couples because it's been probably, you know, at least a good 6 minutes before we've seen tits for no reason. So we're showing both couples having their sexy time. And then we're back out with the government people and they're like, we want to set up a new grid. And Sebastian says, okay, well, that's right near a shipwreck. A lot of time there's a lot of sharks in there. Let me just make sure it's clear.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. So he goes down. And while he's in the shipwreck, you know, there'll be discussion about this is, you know, they'll be like, shipwreck, is there treasure? And they're like, no, that thing's been there a long time, picked over, there's nothing in it. But he's going to put his hand on a piece of wood and out falls this cabinet door with a map attached to it. And he's like, oh, look at this little something something here. And so he'll take it back up on board, but he's hiding it from them. They don't get to see it. And it's the map to a new treasure.
Oh. Curly's gold.
Yeah. So when we see Sebastian next, he's going to be in bed with Danny. And the very moment he says, listen, I got something I want to talk to you about, in walks Mace. And he's going to go, come on, bitches, it's time for the tournament. So... another battle for beach supremacy.
Sure.
I figured this time we'll make it over the line, which is kind of like softball on the beach. We'll make it a different sport, but all our friends are going to be there. Pavarti and Amanda and Audrina, and she's still dating Avery.
Okay. Anyone from, like, Love Island maybe thrown in as a...
We could add if you like, yes.
Yeah, we get it. We could add the people from all kind of island-based reality shows.
We could have Chuck Woolery there saying, "There's a timeout. We'll be back in 2 and 2." That's a
Is
love
that
connection.
What he does
in
Survivor?
Oh, no, love that's connection, a, that's okay. Love connection. Yeah. So big over the line tournament, and our heroes are gonna win. All very exciting. Audrina's gonna be. I also have Detective Paul Yorkin kind of looking in, like separating the sure. group when they get a little angry at each other.
Okay. Well, he's refereeing the game?
No, he just happens by, but once shit starts, he's like, hey, come on, like guys. And Avery's still pissed because they're like the best people in the, you know, they have the best business now and the fanciest boat.
Yeah.
And so at the victory party, Audrina is going to kind of come on to Mace and we'll discover he's not interested. His new woman is the only woman for him. He's a new man, Tom. Detective Paul Yorkin enters. He's just like, okay, we're going to be okay here. Everything's all right. And then the second he leaves, in walks Azra. And she drops the bomb. Two bombs. One, I'm afraid that thing you signed, Mace, is basically he pulled a Paulie from Rocky V. Mm. And they don't have their money anymore. That lawyer has taken all the money. Mm-hmm. And so now she says you're dead broke, and so you're gonna have to help me.
Wow.
You know, lots of arguing. Why didn't you tell me this? And, you know, she's also going to pull out the map. He's going to be like, where did you get that? He's like, I stole that from your boat. This is what we're getting now. I took your money. I'm taking this money. What you guys did, I don't care for. My Uber boss, by the way, is none too pleased with you or with me for the snafu with the bombs, with the nuclear bombs. So you're going to be forced to help me find this new treasure.
The last thing you want to have with a nuclear bomb is a snafu.
Yeah, I'll say. Sebastian is now saying, how can we trust you? And she says, you can't. Mm. Well, the next thing you know, the next day they got to go try to find this treasure. And the boat is near the shore, and they, you know, Sebastian and Mace kind of give each other a look, and Mace does his Mace thing where he kind of falls out the boat like he's a goof. But in the end, it turns out he just is turning on a transponder underneath the boat.
Goofy like a fox.
Goofy like a fox, baby. So as they're sitting there, you know, Sebastian is trying to tell them what they've discovered that on this map is that they're, you know, on an off island, there's a system of underwater caves, and he's trying to convince her this is like the deepest cave system, the most dangerous cave system. Most people that go in there don't come out alive. You don't want to do this. This is dumb.
Yeah.
And the next thing we know, a boat is approaching. And she says, you're in trouble now. And it turns out it's going to be Bates, who you don't know, because I imagine you haven't seen the first movie. But one Josh Brolin is Bates from the first movie. And it's going to turn out he's the Uber boss. Now, I have not rewatched that movie, Tom, but I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering correctly, he does blow up in a plane crash at the end of that movie. So I'm just going to have him burned.
yeah, just a little, you know. A
little singed, you know.
Half a face, yeah. Yeah. Half a face always takes care of that.
So, we'll do it Dr. Loomis style.
Dr. Loomis, 006 and GoldenEye.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a classic trope.
It's great.
So someone who's clearly died comes back a little bit burned.
Well, when he arrives, he's both mad at Azra for not getting this all going quicker. Hmm. And she's like, I've been doing research for this and that. And he's, you know. And then Sebastian starts in with his shit again, saying, this isn't safe. You don't want to go in there. And the next thing you know, he goes, sure I do. And he pulls Allie over. I forgot to mention, that's Mace's new woman, Allie with an I. And he kills her right on the spot. So, you know, he'll say something to the effect.
Mace cannot catch a break.
He can't catch a break. So
he's cursed.
It's going to be like the Lethal Weapon 2 moment, you know? Like, you don't have a lot of luck with women, do you? Kerblammo.
Yeah. I mean, he's turning into Andy Sipowicz from NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
How many of his family members died in the course of that show?
All of them?
At least two that I can think of.
Well, after much anger and shenanigans, our heroes begrudgingly agree we're gonna help you. Mm. And so the next, we'll cut to the Mollusk guys who are like, "Where's our boat? What's going on?" And the detective.
How long have they been out there? They've just.
It's the next day. They're just waiting that morning. They're like, he was supposed to meet us.
Oh, okay, so they're not in the water with the mollusks.
No,
waiting for the boat. They're at the harbor waiting for the boat. Yeah. That makes more sense, yeah.
And Detective Paul Yorkin is on the case. He's going to happen by, and he's like, that doesn't sound like Sebastian. Must be in trouble. He'll go talk to Avery, because Because Avery's got the thing where you can follow the transponders. This is like something they all put on the island, you know?
Yeah.
Since the last shenanigans, so that they can find each other.
That's...
And then we'll cut to our heroes. They're hiking on land. You know those, like when you're on land and it's like a big hole with the water underneath. And that's where the cave system starts. They have to kind of jump in, throw the equipment in. They start looking. They're, searching, diving, talking maps, deciphering language on the map, that kind of shit. And in the moment where they're going to take a break, you know, Mace has just had it. He's like, you know, right under here, there's like a small cave entrance, isn't there? And they're like, yeah. And he goes, just try to escape when you can. And they're like, Mace, don't do it. Don't do it. And he walks over and he right before he leaves, he has that, I'm going to do what I do best. Fuck shit up. Mm-hmm. But Azra's going to
get my girlfriend's killed.
Yeah, he's going to punch one person, throw them in the water, and Azra's going to shoot him in the head.
and he dies?
I'm not done yet, Tom.
Okay.
Don't ask questions.
I'm hanging on your every word here.
But when the bad guys turn around, Danny and Sebastian, they're gone. That's like, so now they're separated. It's like a Hardy Boys episode. We're going down different parts of caves. We're underneath the water. We're above the water. We're trying to, you know.
Always smugglers. They always end up being smugglers.
Sneaking around, that kind of shit. And then up above, now Yorkin and Avery are at the boat. They start walking up, tracking the footprints. Uh-huh. Up to the cave. They're going to dive in. They're going to follow. And there, of course, will be a moment where you think they're going to get killed because somebody's sneaking up on them. Turns out it's Mace. Just grazed the forehead. So he's alive. Of course.
The classic Dennis Farina in Get Shorty.
Exactly.
Bullet head injury.
The heroes, you know... Danny and Sebastian, they'll get at least one henchman. Then they're going to actually start really trying to find the treasure. They find the treasure, but who catches... Basically, it's like Goonies style, where they get the treasure, but then the bad guys catch up to them.
You have to make it Fabio's twin brother.
I gave that serious consideration of like trying to get Fabio
who's
there, back
who's
in there.
Who's there for revenge?
Yeah.
Because didn't Mace kill Fabio? I mean, Fabio killed Fabio.
Left him to die. He wasn't going to help him. Yeah.
And this Fabio, Fabio's twin brother, has water wings this time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You think he's going to succumb to the same fate, but he's got water wings.
Yeah, what I was thinking was if a Fabio-type character was in it, I like the brother angle, so we'll make it his twin brother.
Yeah.
And he's about to kill Sebastian and Andy, and then the detective and Yorkin and Mace save them.
Hmm.
They find the treasure, but then who's hot on their heels? Both Bates and Azra. And Bates says, it's a real shame, like you came all this way just to die. And he's like, Azra, kill them. And then that's the moment where Sebastian's going to say, you know, it's strange that she missed Mace. She doesn't really strike me as the kind of person who misses. And it occurs to me, we're the only ones left here. And if she kills you, then she takes over, doesn't she? And right in the middle of Bates saying, there's no way she would ever be dumb enough to, she turns around and shoots him.
Azra redeems herself.
She's going to kill him. She's going to take over. They decide to split all the treasures. And, of course, the last lines will be something like Sebastian saying, how can I be sure you never will come back here again? And she says, you can't. Roll credits. Mm.
Did she disappear into thin air again?
God, I hope so. Just like a puff of smoke and...
Like a sea, into like a sea
half
mist.
The treasure gone.
They say, but, you know, they turn around and say, how do we know that you're not going to come back again? And she's already gone. Like,
yeah.
Like Batman.
Deep blue sea. Into the blue, 3, deep revenge. There you have it.
Well, my, you know, initial reactions, it's a winner.
Why, thank you.
I love how you've found a way to acknowledge the original movie and turn them into a cohesive trilogy.
Right.
I also love how are you a big fan of the book Treasure Island?
I mean, I've read it.
Yeah.
That's so funny you say that, because
I kind of mapped into the blue onto the storyline of that book.
I know. I literally was picking that book up the other night and thinking I would start rereading it.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Azra's kind of the sort of captain figure in that. Yeah, it's really great. I think we're lucky that we don't have to pitch budgets as well for these movies. Because your pitch is gonna have it's gonna have to be a theatrical release again. It's gonna have to have that kind of money behind it.
Oh, I have information on that too. Into the Blue 2 was released in theaters in England and a few other countries.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite common. I think we saw that with the Ewoks movies, that they were theatrically released, where they were only TV movies in America. I mean, on the high end of that is the Twin Peaks pilot was released as a movie in France.
Okay.
So, yeah. Because, I mean, Europe doesn't have the same television culture to sort of insert a movie like that in it. Although traditionally they do terribly because they're made for TV and they look crap on a movie screen.
Yeah.
Except, of course, Twin Peaks won't. But I still don't think it would translate on a big screen because it's very television-specific aesthetics. Anyway, but I was thinking, you know, if you wanted to save some money, that the when you talk about that underground cave system, you could just, like, find a health center that has a climbing wall and then just film it on its side.
Or go to,
you
like...
know, let's do it like Batman 66, you know, when they're climbing the rope and they've just turned the camera.
Right, go to some zoo.
You could film it all in a zoo, really.
Yeah. The penguin encounter at SeaWorld.
Now we know why Hollywood won't take our ideas seriously, because every time they ask any budgetary questions, we say, take over a zoo for the day. And film all your action scenes.
What's the big deal? It's perfect.
Yeah. Why are there so many penguins in the background of the show?
Put the tigers somewhere else for a day.
Well, wonderful.
Thank you. I'm quite pleased with it.
You should be. And I'm glad you went into depth on it, because I went into more depth in my Shay Part 3 pitch, but this is going to be more of a thumbnail.
All right.
So it's a nice...
It's a role reversal.
It's a nice counterbalance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether you'll be happy to know or not, but I have also chosen Into the Blue 2 The Reef to develop a sequel to.
Excellent.
I say sequel. It's really more of a spin-off.
Okay.
I'm thinking... Backdoor pilot TV movie.
Yes, yes.
With series potential. And the name of my... the cat was out of the bag on this in the episode when I said that I want to see a movie/series about Detective Paul Yorkin.
Yeah.
And by the way, thank you to the movie for giving... And by the way, thank you to the movie... movie for giving him a second name, which he didn't do for any other character.
Right.
That's because I would have had to come up with one. And I don't think I would have come up with anything as good as Yorkin, quite frankly.
Never.
So I wanted to know why he second guessed his own detective skills quite so much in the course of that movie.
This is like like a Chief Wiggum PI.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Paul Yorkin spin-off. The name of the film is Into the Blue 3, : Paul Yorkin, : Beach Cop.
Uh, Semicolon.
And it takes a Lion King 1.5 style approach to the events of Into the Blue to the Reef. So essentially we're seeing Paul Yorkin's story before, during, and after the events of Into the Blue to the Reef.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to his first appearance in that movie on the harbor with Avery. What's his name? Sebastian? Is it Avery?
Avery's the asshole. Sebastian's our hero.
Sebastian, yeah. So he sort of doorsteps Sebastian and when they've got Astra and what was the name of the other guy? Evil. He's got the evil couple. Astra.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The not British guy.
Right.
So prior to that,
Carlton.
Paul Yorkin's informant. There we go, Carlton. Paul Yorkin's beach informant is his codenamed Otis Redding because he sits on the dock of the bay. He's his kind of huggy bear that gives him information. And he's told Paul Yorkin Beach Cup that two international pedigree criminals are coming to his island and to be aware.
Mm.
And so Paul is, you know, he's sort of say who's recently arrived on the island, who this might be. He immediately misses that Astra and Carlton might be those two international criminals. And he goes straight to the survivor contestants. Because he's noticed that they seem to come and go from the island a lot. And they're using a small deserted island just off the coast as a base for something. So he assumes that they're in international smuggling.
Pavarti and Amanda?
Pavarti and Amanda, yeah.
Perfect.
And he sets up a huge sting. He spends, half his year's budget on this one operation. And it turns out, of course, they are just running a survivor fantasy camp off of this island, and they occasionally come to the island for beach volleyball tournaments. So Paul, Paul Yorkin is embarrassed, is a kind of career low.
Poor Paul Yorkin.
And that's why the first time we see him on the harbor, he figures something suspicious is going on, but he's second and guessed himself so much because he got it so wrong last time that he's unwilling to take action.
You really want to explain that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love it.
And, he goes back to Otis Redding and he says, he said, your information is wrong. I mean, he's like, seriously, it's not wrong. These guys are here. And, since then I've heard that it's not about smuggling. It's about it's about military hardware.
Mm.
And so Yorkin's like, okay, let's go back to the drawing board. And he uses his contact in Shore Patrol to kind of scour around looking for these missiles. And, they cut up the water in several different ways. They're like, okay, so there's only like literally there's like a square mile where these bombs could be right now. So we're right there. But just at that point, Shore Patrol gets the call about, what was her name? The one who, Sebastian's girlfriend. When she went night diving and trapped in the water.
Yeah. It's Andy.
No,
Danny.
Andy, yeah. Danny, yeah.
And Andy, I think, like, was the other one. No, that's Kimmy.
So
they're
Paul Yorkin's.
They all end with eyes. That's why I went with Allie. Allie
so
with
Paul
an
Yorkin,
eye.
Paul Yorkin Beach Cup is, he's like, okay, just take me down. This is the only place these weapons could be. I'm going to find them. I'm going to resurrect my career as a Beach Cup. And
that's a Beach Cup.
And of course, the show patrol guy's like, look, my job is to, you know, I have to handle these emergencies, and there's an emergency. They're calling in. There's a woman with, you know, she's freezing to death. I've got to go and get her. So he's like, okay, go and get her then. We'll go and get the bombs later. I'm sure they'll still be there afterwards. And then, you know, he Paul Yorkin has to be there at the hospital to find out what the fuck's going on and why she was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's getting all these suspicious vibes about why Sebastian is acting so weird at the hospital and who the hell Astra is and why she's there. And again, he second guesses himself because he's too focused on the getting to the bombs. He's like, look, I don't have time for whatever this is. I'm going to have to go out there and get those weapons. And of course, by the time he does all the paperwork for this and gets back on the water, the weapons are already back, you know, back where they should, back in the boat. So he ends the movie back in disgrace, but his redemption comes when he discovers.
Oh, I thought you were gonna leave him hanging.
No. Well, yeah. I mean, we could do, but you know, if you're gonna, this is a pilot, so we have to end on some kind of high note.
Mm-hmm.
So I have him discovering the shipwreck that Sebastian and Danny have been looking for all this time. And he's got it. He's like, okay, I just need to go to the surface and, you know, tell everyone about it. Everyone's going to be, you know, beach cop finds ancient shipwreck. This is what's going to put me back on top. So we do leave on a cliffhanger, but the cliffhanger is who's going to get back to shore quickest to claim the shipwreck. And of course we know from,
don't we know the answer, too?
We know the answer, yeah. So that's where we leave Paul Yorkin beach cop.
This sounds like the beginning of a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah,
like for him to be like, to get those meddling kids. Yeah. You know, he's gonna become the criminal, I think.
Well, then he goes back to, you know, he goes back to Otis Redding and he's like, you know, you screwed me again, Otis. These two bits of unreliable information. And he's like, don't blame the information. The information's correct. And I got a third piece for you. I've got a line on Astra and where she went. So
nice.
That's the end of Into the Blue 3, Paul Yorkin, Beach Cop.
Perfect.
There we go.
Paul Yorkin, semicolon, beach cop.
CBS, the ball is in your
court. Oh, yeah, you know. That's a CBS show if I've ever heard one.
Sure. I mean, you know, that they've canceled all their... all their kind of reboots, Magnum PI and the Lethal Weapon TV show. So they got a big hole in their schedule.
Right.
They fill it with something. Yeah. Fill it with Paul Yorkin, Beach Cop.
I would.
Or apparently sell it to Europe where it was a theatrical release.
Where they appreciate it, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. That's it.
That it, well, yeah, I mean, again, until it's picked up, until it's picked up, you understand.
I do. Well, now the choice is yours, everyone. Which one? Which of these pitches? I mean, I guess we could do all of them, including the Chase.
Yeah, exactly. It might be just, I don't know if you want to package them and, you know, it'd be an overall Mike or Tom yes or no. Do you want...
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
They got to choose.
Do it how Hollywood actually does it, where it goes, okay, you got to buy this.
To get this.
The thing you want.
Oh, yes. So I had Che Castro.
Mm-hmm.
What was your Che called?
Che Part 3.
And that was it?
That was it, yeah.
Okay, Che Part 3.
For some reason, I've turned into you and you've turned into me.
Yeah, what's that all about? Che Castro and Che Part 3. We've got Into the Blue 3, Deep Revenge. And Into the Blue 3, what's his name? Paul Yorkin, semicolon, Beach Cop. Fantastic.
I mean, you know, if the studio wants it to be a dash, it can be a dash. But right now it's a semicolon.
It's not a sticking point?
It depends how many episodes they're going to order. I'm not going to sacrifice grammar for a series order, that's for sure.
Perfect. Well, now it's up to you, everyone. You're going to have to tell us which of these you choose, or which block of these you choose. So,
right. Well, it's basically you're deciding which version of two movies you want to see.
Right.
Of the same movie in both cases.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
That's
true.
I don't
think we've ever pitched two of the same titles.
On a single sequels, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting how none of us went for The Crank.
I thought you'd go The Crank route.
There is literally nothing you can do. I mean, it's the most self-contained single sequel that there is, I think. Because it itself should not exist. So the idea of something following it is a complete anathema to what it is.
But you were so enamored. Thought you'd try to resurrect it.
Yeah. Well, resurrection is key to that film, but how many resurrections can you have in one
series?
In one series?
Yeah.
All
right, everybody. Well, the polls will be out in the field. You're going to have to let us know. You can also find us on Facebook, find us on Instagram, and find us nowhere else. Or send an email to everythingsequel@gmail.com. That's it. Those are the pitches. When we're back next time, we'll be roaring back with a new series for you.
Yeah.
For Tom Stewart of Lonesome Whistle Productions, Michael Shantz here of the How Dare You Awards. Say goodbye, Tom.
I'm a little confused. Are we talking about the Austin Myers. I'm a little confused. Are we talking about the Austin Powers Mike Myers, or is this someone else? Who's Austin Myers?
I don't know.
He's an actor too. Austin Myers.
Is he?
Now I have to look him up. Austin Myers.
You sure you didn't mean Oscar Meyer?
You should know who he is. He's an American football player.
If you say so.
And a murderer.
I just put him in too. It said murder of Justin Black.
Wow. Rob Zombie really got in my head there.
Oh, man. This is terrible.
Wait, so there's a convicted murderer whose last name is Myers?
Guess so.
That seems like taking, you know, fan fiction too far.
Yeah, cause of death, stab wounds.
Okay.
Well, that's a bummer we're ending on, everyone.
Well, there we go. What a nice nice way to end the episode.
Sorry about that.
Yep. Oh, you don't need to apologize. I think we know whose fault this is.
Once again, we gotta contact our lawyers.
Yep. All 70 of them.
Inflicting emotional damage over here.
No one will work with us anymore.
I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either.
All right, everyone. We'll be back. Thanks for listening.
I like to think I know something about beer. But nowadays, even I get overwhelmed when confronted by the exhaustive selection of craft beers they have at bars, breweries, and even grocery stores. Back in the day, you had one, maybe two craft beers to choose from, and if you were confused, you ordered a Guinness. But in beer destinations like San Diego, the craft beer options lately are in double, sometimes even triple, digits. So what's a beer drinker to do? You need what I need. The Vegas Beer Guys. Your beer of choice should be a perfect blend of malt and hops. And so a live show about beer needs that same balance. And the Vegas Beer Guys matches beer expert Dan Aker with self-proclaimed beer novice Stephen J. Weiss. The results are eminently drinkable. They're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. They'll try new beers. They'll tell you about beer. Think of them as your beer Sherpas guiding you up a foamy-headed mountain to reach the peak of your pint. God, I need a beer.